Welcome to Base by Base. Today we're diving into the microscopic world inside your cells, specifically focusing on a really fascinating organelle, the lysosome.
Yeah, people often call it the cell's recycling center, which is true, but it's quite a bit more than that.
Right, it's not just a trash bin. It's a highly controlled environment, crucial for breaking down materials, sure, but also for recycling valuable components and even sending signals.
Absolutely. Yeah. And key to all of that function is its internal environment. Specifically, it needs to be acidic. Really acidic.
How acidic are we talking?
We're talking about a pH around 4.6. That's roughly 500 to 1,000 times more acidic than the surrounding cytoplasm, which sits near neutral pH 7.2.
Wow, that's a massive difference. And maintaining that steep proton gradient is critical.
It's fundamental. It's the power source. That gradient allows the digestive enzymes inside the hydrolases to work properly, and it drives the transport of molecules across the lysosomal membrane. Without it, the whole system grinds to a halt.
Okay, so how does the cell build up this acidity? We know some key players, right?
We do. The main one is the VATPase. It's a proton pump constantly pushing H+ ions into the lysosome. That's the primary acidifier.
Constantly pumping in protons. Okay, and wasn't there a recent discovery about a channel letting protons out? TMM-175?
Yes, exactly. TMM-175 acts as a rapid H+ leak. But, and this is important, it really only kicks in when the lysosome gets extremely acidic, sort of below pH 4.5.
So like an emergency relief valve to prevent it from getting dangerously over-acidified.
Precisely. A fast leak, sometimes called lyso-H1, for those extreme conditions.
But that left a gap, didn't it? Mm-hmm. If the VATPase is always pumping in and TM-175 only acts at super low pH, how does the lysosome manage its acidity, you know, more gently, across a wider range?
That was the puzzle. How does it regulate pH dynamically around its normal working range, say pH 4.6 to 5.0? And what allows it to gradually become less acidic if you, for example, inhibit that VATPase pump?
Right, because experiments show that if you block the pump with drugs like bethylamycin A1, the pH doesn't just stay put, it slowly drifts up towards neutral.
Exactly. That drift proves there must be another pathway, a slow constitutive H+ leak operating across this broader pH range, maybe from 4.5 up towards 6.0. Let's call it lyso-H2.
A slow, steady leak, so people suspected something was there.
Oh, yes. There were speculations, maybe H+ I-coupled transporters, maybe certain metabolites carrying protons across. But the actual protein, the molecular identity of this slow leak pathway, lyso-H2, remained unknown.
Which brings us to the focus of our discussion today, a really fascinating paper from Zhaoxin Zhu and colleagues, published in Cell in 2025. They set out to find this missing player.
They did, and they identified a protein involved in this slow leak, but its mechanism, well, it was pretty unconventional.
And the implications, as we'll see, stretch into really critical areas like programmed cell death for apoptosis and even neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's. So let's unpack what they found.
Okay, so first, just to reiterate the importance of that gradient. It's not just for enzymes. That proton difference is potential energy used by transporters.
Right, to move amino acids, lipids, all the breakdown products out of the lysosome.
Exactly. And other things in. It's a hub, so dynamic control is crucial. You have VATPase pumping in, TMEM-175 for extreme lows, but you need this lyso-H2, this slow leak, for the fine-tuning in the normal range.
Before this study, were there any prime suspects for lyso-H2?
There were ideas. Some looked at chloride channels like CLCN7, thinking maybe counter-ion movement was involved. But knocking those out didn't stop the slow deacidification, so they weren't the primary slow leak. The main player was still hiding.
So how did Xu and colleagues actually hunt for it? What was their strategy?
It was quite clever. They used a screening approach. They took advantage of libraries of human cell lines, specifically HAP1 cells.
Yep.
But these weren't just any cells. Each cell line in the library had a specific gene knocked out using CRISPR technology. And they focused the screen on genes predicted to encode lysosomal membrane proteins.
Targeting the likely location. And specifically, proteins whose function wasn't fully understood. The orphans.
Precisely. They were looking for a protein located on the lysosome membrane that might be responsible for this leak.
So they have this collection of knockout cells. How did they test which missing protein affected the pH leak?
They used fluorescent probes that report lysosomal pH, Dyes like Frodo or Oregon Green conjugated to dextran, which get taken up by lysosomes, their fluorescence changes depending on the acidity.
Ah, so you can measure the pH inside the lysosomes in these different cell lines.
Exactly. The key experiment was to inhibit the VATPase pump with Bethylomycin A1. In normal cells, this causes the lysosomes to slowly get less acidic, as we discussed, because of the slow leak.
So they looked for cell lines where this didn't happen, where the lysosomes stayed acidic even when the pump was off.
That's it. They screened for knockouts that prevented this BAFFA1-induced deacidification. If a cell line lacked the slow leak pathway protein, its lysosomes would remain acidic or deacidify much more slowly.
And did the screen point to anything specific?
It did. One gene consistently came up. SLC7A11. When SLC7A11 was knocked out, the lysosomes failed to deacidify properly after VATPase inhibition.
SLC7A11. Hold on. Isn't that the cystine glutamate antiporter, XCT, usually found on the plasma membrane, involved in importing cysteine for glutathione synthesis?
That's its well-known role, yes. It was definitely a surprising candidate for a lysosomal proton leak.
So the first question must have been, is SLC7A11 actually on the lysosome?
Right. And they confirmed this rigorously. They used immunofluorescence, staining with antibodies against SLC7A11, and co-stained with lysosomal markers like LAMP1.
And they saw it there.
They did. They used super-resolution microscopy to get a really clear picture, showing SLC7A11 signals decorating the limiting membrane of lysosomes. They also performed subcellular fractionation isolating lysosomes and found SLC7A11 protein enriched in those fractions.
Okay, so it's definitely present on lysosomes. But maybe its lysosomal function is somehow linked to its plasma membrane job. How did they prove the lysosomal SLC7A11 was doing the pH regulation?
That's a critical point. They engineered a specific mutant form of SLC7A11. They identified amino acids important for its trafficking to the lysosome and mutated them, creating the L388-AL389-AY49S mutant, which they called SLC7A11-AAS.
Okay, a trafficking mutant.
Yes. This AS mutant still went to the plasma membrane, but its localization to the lysosome was significantly reduced. And crucially, when they put this AAS mutant back into the SLC7A11 knockout cells, it could not rescue the defect in slow proton leak.
Ah, so the protein needs to be on the lysosome to perform this pH leak function? That pins it down.
Exactly. It strongly implicates the lysosomal pool of SLC7A11 in mediating the slow constitutive H+ efflux of the lyso-H2 pathway.
Okay, I'm convinced it's on the lysosome and doing something related to pH. But the mechanism, how does a transporter that swaps cysteine for glutamate act as a proton leak? It's not an ion channel like TMM175. Or a pump.
This is a really elegant part of the discovery. It's not a direct proton channel. The insight lies in the substrates themselves, cysteine and glutamate. Well, first, remember their concentration gradients. Cysteine is highly concentrated inside the lysosome lumen, much more than in the cytosol. Glutamate is the opposite, much higher concentration in the cytosol than inside the lyso.
Okay, steep gradients. Cysteine wants out, glutamate wants in.
Right. And SLC7A11 facilitates this exchange. Cysteine out, glutamate in. Now consider that these amino acids are protonatable. They can carry protons, or their movement can influence proton balance, especially given the huge pH difference.
So they're like H+ equivalents.
In a way, yes. Think about glutamate entering the acidic lysosome, pH 4.6, from the neutral cytosol, pH 7.2. It can pick up a proton inside. More significantly, consider cysteine, which has acetylamine groups. As it moves from the acidic lumen out to the neutral cytosol, there's a net effect on proton movement.
So the exchange itself effectively mediates proton efflux.
That's the model. The flux of cysteine out and glutamate in, driven by their concentration gradients via SLC7A11, acts as a substrate as H+ shuttle, facilitating the slow movement of protons out of the lysosome.
A substrate as H+ reshuttle. I like that. It's indirect, using the substrate's movement.
Precisely. And they provided evidence for this. Overexpressing SLC7A11 made lysosomes less acidic and increased the H+ leak. And this leak was sensitive to arrestin, an inhibitor of SLC7A11 transport activity.
Blocking the transport blocked the leak.
Yes. And mutating key residues required for transport abolished the leak effect. They also measured changes in the actual luminal concentrations of cysteine and glutamate that were consistent with this transport-driven leak model.
So this gives the cell a constitutive slow leak pathway, lyso-H2, that's distinct from the fast pH-gated lyso-H1, TMA-175. It provides that constant break against the VAT pace.
That seems to be the role. It operates across that working pH range, allowing for more subtle dynamic adjustments than just the emergency valve of TM175.
And this mechanism, using substrate flux, it actually links the leak rate to the lysosome's activity level, doesn't it, through feedback?
It seems to. The model suggests a beautiful feedback loop. When the lysosome is actively degrading lots of material, the concentration of breakdown products inside increases.
Including amino acids like cysteine.
Right. High luminal cysteine would drive more efflux through SLC7A11. According to the shuttle mechanism, this increased efflux would enhance the H+ leap.
Leading to alkalinization, making the lysosome slightly less acidic.
Exactly. Which would, in turn, slow down the activity of the pH-sensitive hydrolase enzymes. It's end product inhibition, mediated by pH changes driven by the products themselves.
Wow. So when the lysosome is full of products, it tells itself to slow down digestion by slightly raising its pH via SLC7A11.
That's the idea. Conversely, when substrates are low, maybe during starvation, VAT pace might be stimulated, SLC7A11-mediated leak might be less dominant, driving pH lower to promote degradation. It integrates degradation state with pH regulation.
That's incredibly sophisticated.
Okay.
So this pathway is key for lysosomal homeostasis, but the study went further, linking it to cell death and disease. Let's talk ferroptosis.
Right. Ferroptosis is a specific type of regulated cell death. It involves iron, lipid peroxidation, and often issues with antioxidant systems, particularly glutathione or GSH.
And SLC7A11's plasma membrane function is linked to GSH because it imports cysteine needed to make it.
Correct. But this study found a direct lysosomal link. They showed that knocking out or inhibiting SLC7A11 led to lysosomes becoming over-acidified.
Too acidic now because the slow leak is gone.
Yes. And get this. They demonstrated that this lysosomal over-acidification was a direct cause of ferroptosis.
The over-acidification itself triggers ferroptosis. That's unexpected. How do they show causality?
By rescuing the pH defect, they used pharmacological agents like a specific concentration of chloroquine derivative CQ1 known to raise lysosomal pH, or they overexpress the other leak channel, TMM175, to compensate.
Providing an alternative escape route for protons.
Exactly. And when they corrected the lysosomal overacidification in these SLC7A11 deficient cells using either method, it prevented ferroptosis.
Even if the cells were still, say, low on cytosolic GSH due to the plasma membrane role of SLC7A11 being absent.
That's the crucial finding. Correcting the lysosomal pH defect alone was sufficient to block ferroptosis, suggesting the lysosome's pH state, regulated by SLC7A11, plays a direct, perhaps primary role in gating the cell death pathway, somewhat independent of the classic cytosolic GSH depletion story.
So the lysosome acts as a checkpoint for ferroptosis, controlled by SLC7A11-mediated pH. How might that work mechanistically?
Well, the paper suggests a few possibilities. Lysosomal enzymes, whose activity depends on pH, might be needed to degrade toxic lipid peroxides that drive ferroptosis. Or lysosomal pH could control the release of iron lysosome store iron, and uncontrolled iron release fuels ferroptosis. Dysfunctional, overacidic lysosomes might leak iron or fail to sequester it properly. Lysosomal storage accumulation could also be involved.
Fascinating. A direct lysosomal control point. And then there's the connection to Parkinson's disease.
Yes. Lysosomal dysfunction is heavily implicated in Parkinson's, particularly in the failure to clear misfolded alpha-synuclein protein, which forms toxic aggregates called Lewy bodies.
And previous studies had hinted SLC7A11 might be involved.
Hints from genetic studies, yes, linking variants or expression levels to PD risk. This study provided a functional mechanism. They obtained cells from Parkinson's patients carrying a specific rare mutation in SLC7A11, PGV767.
Okay, patient-derived cells with a suspect mutation. What did they find?
They found these cells, both fibroblasts and neurons derived from them, exhibited SLC7A11 dysfunction. Specifically, their lysosomes were over-acidified, and they had impaired lysosomal degradation capacity.
Just like the knockout cells, or cells treated with the inhibitor. So the PD-link mutation breaks the slow-leak function.
It appears so. And the critical link. This lysosomal defect caused by the faulty SLC7A11 directly promoted the aggregation of phosphorylated alpha-synuclein, the toxic species in PD.
So the broken pH regulation leads to impaired garbage disposal, allowing toxic proteins to build up.
That's the connection they made. They saw increased alpha-synuclein aggregation in the patient-derived neurons, and they confirmed this in vivo using mice completely lacking SLC7A11 knockout mice. These mice also showed lysosomal overacidification and increased alpha-synuclein pathology in their brains.
Wow, and could they reverse it?
Remarkably, yes. When they treated the patient-derived neurons, or the knockout mice, with interventions that corrected the lysosomal over-acidification, like that CQ1
Let
compound.
me guess, it reduced the alpha-synuclein aggregation.
It did. It restored lysosomal function and significantly decreased the alpha-synuclein pathology. And even more strikingly, in the SLC7A11 knockout mice, correcting the lysosomal pH defect actually improved their motor coordination deficits.
That's huge. It connects this specific molecular mechanism, SLC7A11's role in lysosomal pH, via substrate shuttle, directly to the pathological aggregation and behavioral symptoms relevant to Parkinson's.
It really strengthens the case that lysosomal pH homeostasis, maintained by this pathway, is critical for neuronal health and preventing the buildup of toxic proteins in neurodegenerative disease.
So the big picture here is that SLC7A11, this protein mainly known for its job outside the cell, is also working inside the lysosome, using this really clever substrate shuttle mechanism to manage pH.
Right, a slow constitutive leak that's vital for dynamic control and feedback.
And this seemingly subtle internal process is actually a major protective mechanism against ferroptotic cell death and plays a direct role in Parkinson's pathogenesis by affecting how neurons clear alpha-synuclein.
It definitely elevates the importance of this pathway, and it opens up potential therapeutic avenues, doesn't it? If you could modulate this pathway, maybe fine-tune lysosomal pH.
Could that be a strategy for Parkinson's or other conditions involving ferroptosis or lysosomal dysfunction? It's a tantalizing possibility.
Of course, there are still questions. The interplay between SLC7A11, TMM175, and the VATPase needs more detailed study under various physiological conditions. And translating pH modulation into safe and effective therapies is a big hurdle.
Naturally, science moves step by step. But this work provides a major new piece of the puzzle.
A fundamental insight into how lysosomes work and why it matters for devastating diseases.
It really leaves you pondering, doesn't it? We focus so much on the big players, the pumps and major channels. But maybe these quieter, subtler regulatory mechanisms, like metabolite fluxes influencing pH, are just as critical across many cellular systems. What other hidden regulators might be steering health and disease?
It's a great question. For anyone wanting to explore the details we've discussed, the specific experiments, the data, the figures showing SLC7A11 localization, or the alpha-synuclein changes, it's all laid out in the original paper by Hoxie Nizhu and colleagues in Cell from 2025.
And that paper is open access, published under a Creative Commons CC BY 4.0 license. We'll put a DOI and a link to the license in the description for you.
A really compelling story from inside the cell.
Thanks for joining us on Base by Base.